You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall.
You're my private dancer, dancer for money.
Do what you want me to do. I'm your
private dancer,
dancer for money. And any old music will do.
8:03 on a Tuesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. We'll talk to Thomas Drance in just a minute here on the Halford and Bruff Show. A couple things to tell you about final hour of this program, what we learned, all that good stuff that you get from 8 to 9 o'clock on Sportsnet 650. It is brought to you by the fine folks at the Delory family of Acura dealers. Go to the one on Terminal Avenue today, 730 Terminal Avenue. Everything you could possibly need is down there. You want your car washed? No problem. That's down there. You want a coffee? They got you covered.
But what if I'm in the valley, Mike? What then?
You should go to Acura of Langley on the Langley Bypass.
Right on.
Yeah.
You could tell Halford's brain was working overtime. It was like, is Langley in the valley?
I'm like, wait a minute. You're
talking, which valley?
Yeah. Are you talking about Lynn Valley? If so, North Shore Acura's got you covered. Now tell them about Kintec in your feet.
Your sore feet that are no longer sore. Yeah.
This hour of Halford and Bruff is brought to you by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt?
It's very dismissive the way that I said it.
Mine did.
I spit it out. And your
weak feet.
Your revolting foot problem.
Kintec helped my revolting foot problem. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. I had a leg length discrepancy.
Oh, I've heard the commercials.
I imagine Jason sitting down at the sales associate. It takes his shoe off, and the sales associate just goes, oh, my.
You remember Al Bundy every time he had to fit someone for shoes? That's what I envisioned the entire scene being like at Kintec.
If they can help Jason, they can help you.
All right, sir. I'll get the horseshoes ready.
All right. Let's get to Drance.
Let's do Drance. Joining us now from the Athletic Vancouver, Thomas Drance here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Drancer?
Well, gentlemen, I've always said you guys have the dynamic of an old married couple, but I didn't expect you to enter my hit with a chat about Jason's bunions. Like, my goodness, it's a new low.
They aren't bunions.
It's a leg length issue.
It's a leg length discrepancy.
It's hereditary.
Drance. Yeah. What are you more excited for right now, the Blue Jays or the start of hockey season?
Oh, you got to be more excited about the Blue Jays right now, right?
It's hard not to be.
I mean, this team is bad. And by that, I mean, like, they're made up of bad men destroying opponents. It's a ton of fun. Meanwhile, I look at the roster for Canucks rookie camp, and there's, like, three defensemen on it, right? Which means that, you know, to have a proper practice, you're basically going to have a forward rotating in on D. And so, you know, I'm going to be like tweeting a lineup thing, and it's like, you know, Ethan Kepin rotating back on D. Like,
please do not tweet the rookie camp. Please don't do that. there's no need to be. What? Why? What doing? What? Like, are you not like fine? Tweet interviews and that sort of stuff, but don't be like, he's looking good in puck battles.
If I don't see at least 10 Ethan Kepin tweets now, I'm going to be disappointed.
but also, rookie camp takes place at 25% pace, right? It's not like a development camp environment where you're at least putting players in a, you know, competitive, albeit sloppy, scrimmage environment where they want to show something. Like, this is just a don't get hurt before training camp. Even though every environment these guys are in is an evaluative one, like, you know, that it's just, yeah, no, there's no, no question. There's no question. The Blue Jays being up like 5-0 before the third inning every time I turn the TV on, that's more exciting to me at the moment than the slow lead up to the NHL season.
Well, we talked about this in the exact same context that you're talking about, is that most of this stuff is just ceremonial, rite of passage, friendly reminders to everyone that when this thing happens, it's that much closer to the start of hockey season. Rookie camps across the NHL are one of these. And then, of course, training camp coming up a little bit later, where, let's be honest, it doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot, but the players do the things that sort of kick off the season. I guess the only really interesting thing about the rookie camp isn't necessarily the camp itself. It's where the guys that are participating in it are going to end up this year. And, right. you know, and that it goes part and parcel with the fact that the AHL team is now in Abbotsford. So there's a tangible relationship between guys you see here, you may see play in a month's time in the American League right in our backyard.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing I'd add is, you know, what this development camp roster or rookie camp roster sort of really drives home for me, too, is how much I miss Penticton, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the Young Stars tournament and that environment where you've got four Canadian teams and the prospects. And, you know, I think about the seasons past where it's been like Dreisaitl or McDavid and Johnny Gaudreau and Monahan and Bo Horvat. I mean, you know, real prospects have debuted there. You know, you go cover a game at 2 p.m. It's a full arena. And then you go hit like three wineries. That is the best. And obviously we can't quite do that right now because of the pandemic. And that also still impacts why I think you've got sort of a more moderate or more restrained list of rookies here and no invites and on is that like mixing extra players into your group is really complicated, right? Like even just getting your own players to training camp is really complicated these days. See Vasily Podkolzin's, you know, multi-week, multi-month wait for a work visa as a prime example. So, you know, it's just more complicated these days to do some of the normal fun stuff, even if we are going to start an NHL season on time. And I think the shape of this rookie camp reflects that. And more than anything, especially because I was in the Okanagan last week, like I was in Penticton right after Labor Day when the whole town basically sort of hollows out. It's like your own, you have everything great all to yourself. And I was just thinking, like, my goodness, I can't wait to do this again and expense it.
You know what? I want to talk to you about that because that tournament and that event, that was a big deal for South Okanagan, the event center, the people up there, because it wasn't just this sort of cursory guy show up and glide around for a couple hours each day and then take off. The tournament ended up being this great thing that was a big event. And I know everything got turfed with the pandemic, but this was turfed pre-pandemic with no clear sight as to whether it was going to come back or not. And one of the reasons I remember this is it's expensive to pull it off. Like, it's a great event. And, you know, I think for fans that aren't in the Lower Mainland that don't get to watch the team on a regular basis, like, it's a real connection thing with the organization and the fans. But
do you remember when we rented that cute little yellow house?
Now, this was all just an excuse to bring up the time that we rented a VRBO, and it was this very adorable little bungalow. And
lovely.
Jason and I went up together, and
it was just so nice to get away, just me and you.
The proprietor left us a bottle of wine, and I'm like, oh, she thinks we're here on a vacation together, possibly our honeymoon. I was like, well, we're going to drink the wine now. And we did, and it was lovely. But that was all part of the charm of the whole thing, was it was right. A trip within BC, you get to go. Do you think we'll ever get back to pandemic or no? Do you think they'll do that again?
100%.
Okay.
And I mean, I think there's a lot to unpack. First of all, the prospect tournament itself was, you know, a huge win for the Canucks specifically. And I think in general had a pretty nice impact over the years as like a development arena for, you know, and I brought up the big name prospects that have played there over the years, but like the real prospects that I think of, or the real guys that I think of that, you know, Penticton helped elevate, were guys like Antoine Roussel. And I know this is a deep cut, but Antoine Roussel went to the Canucks camp in 2011 and got an invite to the AHL. And that was like how he punched his ticket back to the NHL after it sort of didn't work out for him in his first stop. I think it was with Boston. Or a guy like Troy Stetcher, or a guy like Eddie Lack, had big tournaments and all of a sudden were on the radar among Canucks fans as like a prospect of substance. And obviously we know they turned themselves into NHL players. You know, you also look at the referees. A pipeline emerged over the years where, you know, some guys who were refereeing at lower levels but not quite in the AHL would come and, you know, be the officials in that environment. And there's a ton of those guys who are now everyday NHL officials, a lot of them based in the Lower Mainland. Like, it was not just an important development environment for players but also for referees. And then, you know, it went away in part because, you know, Flames management at the time, Edmonton management at the time, like, didn't really share the vision. But with Ken Holland, Vernon BC's Ken Holland from the Okanagan himself in Edmonton, you know, the architect of the Traverse City tournament back in his days with the Detroit Red Wings.
Right.
That dynamic fundamentally flipped, right? Like, that dynamic fundamentally flipped when Ken Holland came into power, and he became, you know, in addition to, you know, Canucks personnel, including John Wall, who lives up in Peachland, right, and is the executive director of hockey operations, a driving force toward resuscitating that tournament. He was a really important voice to add there. And then you get the other teams back. Winnipeg and Calgary sort of follow the lead of two teams that are deeply, deeply committed to holding the tournament. And that's, of course, the Canucks and the Oilers. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'll have it back on the other side of the pandemic. And I'm looking forward to it. Like, that's one of my favorite events ever. And it's just a way better way to kick off the season than any rookie camp you could ever imagine. Like, it's leagues better. And I'll look forward to doing it again in a full South Okanagan Event Center barn, and, you know, a ton of tourists from both Alberta and Vancouver sort of creating that fun, you know, warring dynamic in the building.
Drancer, speaking of Kenny Holland, there's an article up on sportsnet.ca where he's quoted as saying the time is now for the Oilers to go and take that step. And I imagine that means do something in the playoffs. They're a pretty good regular season team, but they didn't do much in the playoffs. What do you think of what the Oilers and the Flames have done this offseason? Because, you know, if you're looking at the division that the Canucks are back in the Pacific Division, those are two teams that they might have to beat out in order to make the playoffs.
Yeah. Edmonton, I mean, I think Edmonton is better, probably marginally, but I just think the opportunity cost that got them there was really high. Like, there was, you know, this scenario early in the offseason where I was like, they can create $28 million. Like, they can create $28 million in cap space by buying out Neil and Koskinen. Like, man, that's a team that can improve rapidly. And then when you look at, when you look at how they spent that money, I don't know that they maximized their value for the flexibility or the war chest that they had available to them. And I'm saying that as someone who believes in Duncan Keith as a bounce back candidate, like as a guy who's going to be much more effective for Dave Tippett than he was for Jeremy Cullen in the last couple seasons. So, you know, I just thought the opportunity cost was huge and that the upgrades aren't sufficient considering what could have been accomplished with the space they had. You know, when you look down and see like the losing Adam Larson, you know, and who ends up signing a reasonable contract and replacing him with Cody Ceci at pretty much a dollar in, dollar out amount. Like, that's a downgrade and not an insignificant one. Yeah, I mean, up front, I don't think they significantly address their issues either. So, yeah, I mean, I just see Edmonton as a team with obviously an elite top end and, you know, a team that just didn't really seize what could have been an opportunity to really take a quantum leap forward in terms of, you know, I mean, whether it was taking on money or making a trade before the expansion draft, like there were so many levers available to teams to improve this offseason. And I just wouldn't give the Oilers like an A plus for having been efficient within the space that they had. Now, Calgary's a little different because they weren't nearly as loaded up. And I mean, I like Blake Coleman a lot, but Blake Coleman does feel an awful lot like, you know, the fourth time we've seen the Flames do almost exactly the same deal for a really good player, but like a guy you want to contract earlier, you know? I mean, this feels an awful lot like Troy Brouwer, who they ended up buying out, right? Or James Neal, who they ended up swapping for Milan Lucic. Like, we've seen them sign this guy before. It's never worked. And maybe Blake Coleman is the guy to do it. I mean, I've always said Blake Coleman, like, for me, Blake Coleman's a first line caliber forward. He's a guy who will give you 25 goals, I think, if you play him in the type of role, like in the type of top of the lineup role that he never saw in Calgary, but did when he played for the New Jersey Devils. And look, I like the other thing to keep in mind with Calgary is, like, you know, they didn't play well last year, but they also ended up only finishing. They only finished 2 points ahead of the Canucks, in fact. And we talk about the Canucks' disaster season, right? Like, Calgary's was not much better. And yet, when I look at what they did after hiring Sutter as head coach, like, they were one of the best teams in hockey by the underlying metrics. If that continues, that team could be way, way better than people realize. Like, based on their sort of down the stretch underlying profile, they'd run out of time, they failed to make the playoffs, but the way that they control play down the stretch, to me, if they're able to sustain that, they honestly could be a threat to Vegas at the very top of the division. And I say this as someone who believed in the Flames all year last year too, so take it with a grain of salt, but I see the Flames as a legitimate threat in the Pacific.
Do you have any idea where things stand, or I guess in past tense stood, between the Flames and the Sabres on Eichel? It sure seemed like there was a lot of smoke around it. And now, I don't know, you kind of get the sense that maybe the ship has sailed, but it's all very vague and we're dealing with, you know, innuendo and hearsay and what have you. But
totally.
Yeah, but I feel like if there was a team that wanted to change its identity, it could be Calgary and that could be a way to do it, but it doesn't seem like it's going that direction now.
No, it doesn't, especially after they signed Gudbranson and Mark Stone, which I probably should have brought up too in talking about what Calgary accomplished this summer. I mean, they could have done better on their bottom pair.
Mm-hmm.
And more affordably too. But the Eichel thing, I mean, I never understood, like, why would you want to trade for Jack Eichel if you're in Calgary? I mean, I know he's locked up for a few years, but Jack Eichel's just going to land in Calgary and be like, nope, like, nope, not for me, guys. Thanks. It was never one that made a ton of sense to me.
Yeah.
And I do think when they committed that cap space, it almost felt like they were, you know, waving the white flag in those talks. Now, whether that's true or not, who knows? This one's been very hard to get close to, right?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone has a really good sense of where it is, but Calgary is a destination for Jack Eichel is one that I've found confusing throughout, and would have continued to find confusing in the event that they'd made that deal. Although, yeah, I mean, if you could graft Calgary's depth, if you could graft guys, you know, the Mangiapanis, the Dubés, you know, Hanifin, like all the sort of like second line and second and third pair guys that Calgary has, although that Hanifin-Tanev pair was incredible last year, so maybe their first pair is good too, and obviously I rate their goaltender in Jacob Markstrom. But if you could graft all of that onto a top end, like a top end of forward talent that you believed in, right, as opposed to Monahan, who just sort of has never taken a step, like,
yeah,
he's consistent, but is what he is, and Gaudreau, who, you know, I mean, he just hasn't got it done for Calgary in the playoffs, and that's created some friction, even though, you know, he seems to like it there, at least enough not to Jack Eichel his way out of town. If you could graft a player like Eichel in replacement or in addition to those guys, I mean, I think you would be looking at a pretty imposing club.
Are you, like many, expecting the Kings to take a bit of a step?
We'll see. I mean, they need something to hit, right? Like, they really need something to hit. It's hard to understate the extent of the step the Kings need to take to be a real threat. And yet, I mean, no one's going to have an easy night when Kopitar and Deneau are blanketing your top two centers, right? I mean, that is a brutal set of opponents to face. And I like some of their D. I mean, I think a guy like Mikey Anderson, sort of unknown, but he's a quick righty. Like, he's the type of guy that I think could make a ton of sense on a pair with Edler. But they need a guy like Bjorn Fodd, or like they need another defender to take a big step here. A Matt Roy, something like that. A Sean Walker, like one of those guys needs to take a big step here. And then up front, same thing. Like, they need Fujimo or a Velarde or a Byfield. Like, they need one of those guys, and they have a lot of them. I mean, they also have that Kalev guy who lit up the AHL, was one of America's best forwards at the World Juniors. Like, but they need one or two of those young guys to step into a role where it's like, oh, that guy is, you know, maybe a top 50 forward, or like that guy is maybe a credible second pair defenseman. Like, they need one or two of those guys to really become something more than they are right now. If they're going to take that step, Kopitar, Deneau gives you, and Cal Peterson and Nett, like that gives you a nice spine, but you know, you don't make the playoffs without more than just a core group. Like, you need, and for the Kings, they have the ability to take a quantum leap forward. If one or two of those guys hit at the right time, they've got a massive volume of those guys, and we'll see. Like, I think they'll be in the mix. Like, I think sort of the way that I kind of break down the Pacific, I sort of look at Vancouver needing to beat out one of, you know, Seattle, Calgary, Edmonton, obviously, and the Kings. Like, I have the Kings right up there in that mix. Mm. And I sort of have Seattle, LA, and Vancouver as kind of in a race, like a tier just below the Alberta teams and the Golden Knights. So it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be an interesting story for Canucks fans to track. But yeah, I mean, they have the talent to take a big step. It's just going to come down to whether one or two of those young guys really hit and really take that step this season.
You know, you look at it now, and it's almost like the Canucks are going to have a tearful farewell to the Coyotes from the division, because had it been the old original alignment, you would have had three, I mean, I would say pretty bad teams. Anaheim, I don't think, is going to be very good. San Jose might be one of the – honestly, San Jose might be one of the worst teams in hockey next year, just based on what I've seen from that roster. And Arizona is going to be almost an American League club by the time everyone's done picking the card. Honestly, by the time they get rid of Kessel, which is an inevitability, that would have been three teams that you can feast on all year long.
It's true. Yeah, and I mean, I don't think Seattle is going to be very good, but they're going to be hardworking, and their D is going to be annoying to play against. Like, their D will bruise their opponents all season. And, you know, I mean, I think you're right. I think other than Anaheim and you know, San Jose too is an interesting one, because it's like, are they this bad? Like, are they really this bad? It's hard to square, you know, not just their big names, but also guys like Tomas Hertl and on and on down the list. Like, they've been so shot in the foot by bad goaltending. Like, if they get average goaltending this year, or just better goaltending, I mean, I don't think they're necessarily a free 2 points every night you play them.
Well, is Evander Kane even going to play? I mean, according to the reports, his teammates don't want him back, you know, and there's the investigation. He was their best forward last season?
Him and Hertl were, like, the only two guys that played well last year. That was
it.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, need him from a hockey standpoint, but you almost can't have him in the room because of all his off-ice stuff.
I know. It's a mess. I mean, there's no sugarcoating that it's a mess, but there's still enough talent there that with, you know, league average goaltending, are they the same level of tire fire that we've seen the last 2 years? Like, I don't know. I'm not counting on that necessarily. Anaheim's the only team that I really think is really bad. But even there,
let me just jump in. I love that their answer to the goaltending problem was, let's get Aiden Hill and James Reimer.
Yeah, but it's
still an upgrade.
I mean, it's better.
At least you're rolling the dice with a couple of guys like James Reimer. James Reimer has been average almost every year of his career. Like, James Reimer's the perfect guy, the perfect low rent or low cost roll of the dice to have, because it's just like, James Reimer never looks good stopping pucks, but he always does it at an average or above average rate. Like, perfect, great. I won't worry about it. And then Aiden Hill, you know, there's people around the league that really like him. You know, I think there were probably better and more affordable bets to place, but I know it's goalies. They're voodoo.
Yeah.
Either way, I think that's a huge upgrade on what they had last year. And, like, you know, the Martin Jones and Devin Dubnyk. I mean, it's a huge upgrade. And that can't be understated. Like, what can San Jose do with average goaltending? Like, who knows? We haven't seen it in 4 years. it might be interesting.
Drancer, you're the best, bud. Thanks a lot for doing this. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll do this again next week.
All right, cheers, boys. Bye.
Thanks. That's Thomas Drancer from The Athletic Vancouver here on the Helfer and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. We don't have time to do the poll question because we have to get to break, but real quick, I'll tell you that the daily poll question is up at Sportsnet 650 right now. It is brought to you by Regal Grooming Lounge, bringing a world-class experience to the classic barbershop. Visit regalgrooming.ca. We'll check in with the poll question on the other side, and we'll do what we learn. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Hey! 8:32 on a Tuesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the Morning, brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. If you do that, you can get into a TLX as well. The 2021 TLX. Terrific ride. Adequate trunk space for a sedan. Especially if you're one of those guys that's got a lot of sports equipment that they need to lug around.
Or a lot of bodies.
Again, with the bodies.
Mannequins. Well, mannequins.
Yeah, I don't...
Yeah.
That's almost creepier.
That is creepier. Why do you have a collection of mannequins? People will ask.
No, the dead bodies is probably creepier, actually.
You could use the mannequins to drive in HOV lanes.
That's a real thing.
I know. I've seen it. I haven't done it. Or have I?
Or have you?
Tell the people.
It's my girlfriend.
Talk, darling. Talk to the officer. Tell him about Kintec.
This hour of Halford and Breath is brought to you by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net.
In a rare bit of initiative from producer Dom, you jumped forward during the break and said, I have a what we learned. I said, all right, so let's play the music and then you're going to tell us what you learned.
We're going to need a few things for this class.
Boring.
An eagerness to learn. A thirst for knowledge.
So, what did we learn in the last 24 hours?
When life gives you lemons, just say, F*** the lemons and bail.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
What we learned brought to you by Dilawri Acura. What I learned, Jeff Passan tweeting out 20 minutes ago, that Seattle's T-Mobile Park will host Major League Baseball's 2023 All-Star Game for the first time since 2001.
Nice.
Is that a must-see event for, like, one time in your life, the MLB All-Star Game?
Maybe the Home Run Derby. The game, though.
I feel like the Home Run Derby would be 10 to 15 times more interesting if I was in attendance.
Yeah.
Right?
In the field.
Yeah.
In the bleachers.
Yeah.
Not in the field.
You're not in the field, knocking over little children to get baseballs repeatedly. I think, because I've kind of poked fun at the Home Run Derby before because it comes in that really dead time of the summer.
Yeah, when the ESPYs are on.
Where there's nothing else going on. So everyone watches the Home Run Derby and everyone's got a hot take about it. And then all the sports radio people come in the next morning. Did you see the Derby? I hate it. I hate that part of it. But I think being there, it would be cool. It's a big spectacle, right?
I would sharpen up my elbows if I was in those bleachers. I'm coming away.
Have you ever caught a ball?
Like
Jason's
sure.
there with like a slow pitch glove.
It's like five sizes.
Massive 27 inch length glove
on both hands.
Have you ever caught a ball or a
puck? No, I never
puck?
Have. No.
Nothing?
No, never caught
My
one,
friend
no.
was close. We were at an Angels game. And
oh, your friend was close. That's a good story.
Do you have any poker bad beat stories you can share with us?
It brushed off his fingers. And
Should he have made the play or was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He just didn't commit.
Did he get booed?
No. No. The guy next to him caught the ball.
When I was a kid, I was back when the Vancouver Canadians were AAA at Nat Bailey. I was in the third base on the third base side, mm-hmm. and it was a foul ball, and it was later in the fall, so it was a little slick. I think it was raining a little bit, and I caught the ball.
Yeah,
but I also bailed so uncontrollably that my feet flew out from underneath me, and my head hit the bleacher below us.
Were the bleachers okay?
The bleachers did not make it. Rest in peace to row CC seats 5 through 6. My head destroyed them. I guess I was kind of like out of it for a while.
How old were you?
Did you draw blood?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a big thing. So, and
how old were you?
In
again?
A related story, also dropped the ball. I think I was about 10 or 11 or 12, somewhere in that neighborhood.
You should have sued them.
Yeah. Now I talk about sports on the radio. Why I laugh. So now I'm coming to, and one of the guys that was working there, I guess maybe this was so that I didn't sue everybody and everything. They gave me a very quickly, I guess they got a ball down to the dugout and got a few of the players to sign it, including unforgettable baseball legend Ron Kittle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got a Ron Kittle signed baseball for permanent brain damage. It's definitely worth it.
I'm just looking at the roster for the 2001 All-Star Game, the last time the All-Star Game was in Seattle.
Yep.
Boy, do I feel old now.
Who was on it? Give me just a random baseball guy.
It was Cal Ripken Jr.'s last All-Star game.
Right.
And also Tony Gwynn's final All-Star game. Edgar was on it.
Give me the most random guy. Who is a random baseball guy that participated in the 2001 MLB All-Star game?
Juan Gonzalez.
Perfect. Super random.
Troy Percival.
He was also a random baseball
Look
player.
Look at all the players from the Mariners, too. Like, that was their... I mean, that was when they were good. God, look at all this. Must have been some fan voting here. No, they were just good. John Olerud was a Mariner then.
Yep.
Brett Boone.
Boone.
Suzuki. Edgar. And then the pitchers, Freddie Garcia, Jeff Nelson, Sasaki. Is that it? Yeah, that's like oh no, Mike Cameron was a reserve as well. Like, what a loaded team they had back then.
Jeff Nelson had a really good porn stash back in the day. You remember that?
He wasn't alone.
There was a lot of, yeah. He had a good one, though. And he was a ginger, too, right? He had the best of both worlds going on. Okay, moo cow that.
Sorry, you wanted a moo cow. There we go. And print out.
Now, fire up the dot matrix.
Sorry, I was distracted by the ginger porn stash.
Yeah, Jeff Nelson was either, he was either going to be a Major League Baseball pitcher, in porn, or a cop. He had three options with that look. That was it. There were no other choices.
It sounds like a that sounds like a terrible adult film.
Or he could have done all three. He could have done all three.
What would the name of the movie be? Ginger and Ginger?
Oh, you're talking about the porn movie. I thought you were talking about the cop movie. Oh, yeah, I get it. I get jokes. Okay, what we learned is humanoids. Print them up.
Did.
Click on the redheads category, and you're like, this is very disappointing.
There's not a drop-down button. Where's my drop-down menu?
Oh, my God. All right.
All right.
From James the Liquor Rep.
Focus, yeah.
What we learned, the Roxy opened just in time with the Canucks getting back to town.
Is this now, true? Is the Roxy back?
Well, James the Liquor Rep would know.
I guess.
I wouldn't know. Granville Street frightens me as an older person now. Do players still go to the Roxy, though?
No. Where do they go?
That's kind of old school. That's an old school
thing. They go to Pierre's.
Pierre's.
12.
Anything in Yaletown.
West
really.
Oak. 12 yeah. West. So I got all the, I just jammed them all together.
Stone Temple. Do they?
Yeah. And then to the Purple there? And then to the Purple Onion for a nightcap. Bud.
Kids Pub.
That's, yeah. Nope. They don't go there.
Unsigned what we learned. It wouldn't be a Canucks season without overhyping the team before the preseason. I think we're... I don't know if we're overhyping the Canucks. I think we're legitimately and rightly excited about their forward group. I think we've said that the defense makes us worried a little bit.
Have we even overhyping the Canucks? We get accused of so many polarizing things.
Yeah, either overhyping or no, too negative.
You know what it is? Justin came on today. He said some very nice things about the Canucks, and immediately Canucks Twitter just loses its collective.
But how can you actually deny that there's talent up front?
And that they're better.
And how? And frankly,
they were really bad last year.
And
it's
frankly,
not that hard to be better.
And frankly, how can you deny that there are major question marks about the blue line?
Why do bitter bros exist? I don't know.
What
question. Are the answers to these questions?
This is very philosophical. It's very deep. You are a central figure of this, what we learned. So much so that one just came in. Hashtag WWO, what we learned. I learned that producer Dom, a.k.a. nephew Dom, is a good dancer. Did you do this again? Is there more? I know you
yeah,
did.
Yeah, Rasputin played, so I did the Kozak dance.
Again?
Well, yeah, if it plays, I can't not do the dance.
You can.
No, I can't.
Believe me, you can.
I feel as a Slav, it's part of my
Please
DNA.
Please explain to the non-Slavic people out there what you're talking about.
Well, it's a visual thing. I don't know how much I can...
We're on the radio, bud.
Yeah, which is an audio... Yeah.
Use your words, pal.
It's just a classic Russian dance where you're kicking your feet up in front of you and you've got, you know, hey.
It requires a fair amount of leg strength, I would say.
So how did this person learn that you're a good dancer, though?
It was plastered all over the socials.
Oh, so you did it. So just for everyone knows, apparently this is the summer of producers
plastered
getting...
Plastered all over the socials like you're Nicki Minaj or something like that.
He did the dance at the VMAs last night, actually.
He was at the Met Gala.
Dom threw a drink at Machine Gun Kelly, then started doing...
By the way, what we learned. Like, is there anyone that McGregor won't fight?
Well, yeah. And then, in a weird twist, he downplayed it like it was no big deal. I'm like, dude, you were the one that started the fight. Don't blame this on the media.
Anyway, back to the task at hand.
Okay, so the Kozak dance. Is that what it's called? Or is it
Kozak? That's what I call him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. This is the summer, apparently, of sports radio producers getting married, because you did it at Ryan Henderson's wedding.
Henderson's wedding.
Donnie didn't do it, because that dance is impossible to do in denim.
It's actually easier to do it in denim. I'm wearing very tight suit pants.
No, I noticed.
Makes things harder.
Yeah, and then you did it again last, and the wedding on Sunday was Canberra's wedding.
Canberra.
Yeah.
Who's our, you know, executive producer of Canucks Hockey. And then I did it at my girlfriend's sister's wedding 4 weeks ago.
Wow.
And I'm going to do it again this upcoming
You're on the
Saturday.
Wedding circuit hard this
yeah.
summer.
He's at that
yeah.
age, right?
You're
He's
in your 30s,
age.
Yeah.
I'm at 30, yeah.
Yeah, He's I miss, the age. I miss. You know.
I don't. I've been to all the weddings I need to go to.
Wrong. Because we used to talk about this. There was that, and I think we talked about it on the air before. when you get to within the 48-hour window of knowing that the wedding's on, you know you're going to walk into an open bar. Mm-hmm. That's a real feeling of excitement that you can't replicate. No air fryer, no orthotics are going to ever give you that sense of excitement. The unknown.
I guess I'm getting old because even the idea of the open bar doesn't excite me that much anymore.
Yeah, really that is doesn't. A sign of age.
Yeah.
Right?
I just think about, man, I'm going to be hungover.
But it's so much fun.
I know it is.
When's the next wedding?
Yeah, you go up there and you order something that you've never ordered before. Yeah.
Dustin from Abbey, what we learned, John Rahm is going to be out for vengeance at the Ryder Cup. Easily the best player in the world this season, but catching COVID realistically cost him player of the year. Yeah, I saw this. Patrick Cantlay won the PGA Tour player of the year. I think most people, when they were saying, you know, like who's going to win MVP, they said, you know, Cantlay got hot at the end and he won the tour championship and he won the $15 million for the FedEx Cup or whatever they call it.
Yep.
But Rahm was the best golfer of the year, but as it turned out, and I think it's a player vote. I'm pretty sure it's a player vote.
Okay.
Patrick Cantlay ended up winning that. Now, John Rahm only did have the one win this year, but he was going to win the Memorial
yes.
before getting COVID, and he was just around. Like, he was mm-hmm. in the mix. I mean, I think he deserved it, but whatever.
So the European team was announced yesterday, right? I had to do some serious sleuthing to learn who some of these guys are. Like Tyrrell Hatton. And yeah, didn't know who he was. Bernd Weisberger. I assume he's from the German contingent of the Ryder Cup.
I'm not actually sure.
I don't know a lot of these guys.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Do you?
You probably don't. Well, I don't know. Read
Victor
them.
Hovland?
Yeah, Victor Hovland. Yeah. Right, he's a good player. Norwegian.
Sergio Garcia?
Really?
Do what we learned.
Do you ever flag what we learned?
Yeah, I got a bunch here.
Ever.
Yep, I got a bunch here.
It's organized chaos for Mike Alford, I find.
Table Saw James, what we learned. Current Jeopardy champion Matt Amodio kicked off the new season of Jeopardy with a $67,000 win, bringing his running total to over $640,000. And a 19-game win streak.
So they've hacked Jeopardy, right? Between Ken Jennings and James Holzhauer and this guy, they've kind of hacked how you're supposed to cash in.
I'm a little surprised it took them so long to start gambling big on the Double Jeopardy.
That was the big philosophical switch, right?
Yeah.
Is when you get like the Daily Double is like
the Daily Double. That's what I mean.
You need,
yeah.
It's like baseball. You need to go yard. Like singles and bunts don't get it done. You need yeah. to go. You need to jack, right?
To the point where you see someone get a Daily Double and they're like, "I'll bet a 1500." You're like, "What are you doing?
Yeah, come on, man, live a little." But it's the way that you put the game over the top because you have this sort of insurmountable money lead that they can't catch up to.
It's also the thing with the Daily Double, too, is also you don't need to buzz in. That's a massive advantage.
Right.
It's a massive advantage, mm-hmm. especially if you know as much trivia as those guys. I often find Final Jeopardy easier than regular Jeopardy because you have time to think.
Yeah, you get the dulcet tones playing in the background. It can be very soothing.
Well, I don't think it's soothing. If you're probably in the game, you're like, just slow down the song.
Stop playing the goddamn music.
One final segment to go on the Halford and Brough show.
Late.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. On Sportsnet, 6:50. We're not good at the clock here.
One final thing before we go, as we continue to push the clock. Halford and Brough for the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. If you want to make a ginger, give me King Kokoro. My coach, I beat your love. Anywhere I go, I come up with my bummer love. Oh, they do like bummer. If you want to make a ginger, give me Kokoro. The official financial sponsor of Halford and Brough is ZLC Financial.
At ZLC, they follow a very strict process. There are 5 steps: analyze, plan, implement, review, and repeat. I think that's what the Canucks do. I don't think so. To learn more, visit ZLC.net and remember, advice is only as good as the person you ask.
I'm just trying to get confirmation here that the Roxy is back open. It sure is. It's been open for a while. When's the last time you've been to the Roxy?
I don't know. 10 years? No, probably less than that.
think it's about, yeah, no.
Six days.
I was there last night.
You know what
I think it's about a decade since I last been there.
You know what I was thinking the other day? There's a good chance. So I'm mid-40s now. There's a good chance I'll never be in a club again, ever.
Fair.
Yeah.
And if you do go, it'll be awkward for you.
The last time I was in a club, like, and I don't even know if I'd qualify this as like a true club. Yeah, I guess it was. Was down in Scottsdale a couple of years ago.
Was it what,
in the old town?
Yeah, but what was
you've told this story before?
You felt out of place. What was the establishment though? Was it?
I can't remember what it's called.
Because if it's a Top Golf, it's not a club.
No, it was a Wild Night. He can't remember the name.
Yeah, I think I said that it might have been my last hurrah.
Right.
Like I felt like I was there. I compared it to like the Sedin's final game at Rogers Arena. I was kind of like waving to the servers. I'd be like, it's been fun.
Both involved Arizona.
Yeah,
out here.
Fitting that it was in Arizona. Yeah,
how fitting indeed. Yeah, if you're there and you're cognizant of the fact that you might be the oldest person there, mm-hmm. that can be overwhelming.
Oh, I don't think I was the oldest person there.
But you could have been.
I could have been.
Yeah.
I had a great time. Like I left it all on the ice or whatever. You know,
right.
Like on the field.
Right. Did they give you
on the sticky floor, whatever. I left it all out there.
They applauded when you left. And it was like, thank God he's gone.
Yeah.
He was ruining the vibe in here big time. Okay.
I actually think Biz Nasty showed up.
Really?
Yeah, I think he was in the bar. I missed him though. But he was there.
Oh, okay. That
could have been a dream though. Could have just been like
or a nightmare. Yeah. Really, let's be honest. I think I might be out of the game as well.
You think you might be out of the game? You're out of the game, pal.
No. You're what, like 49, right?
I'm younger than that.
How old are you?
Mid-40s, just
right.
say.
Right, okay.
Oh, that's lame.
What's lame?
You're lame. You know
you
what?
Don't want
everything
to say
about
age?
You is, well, I'm 45.
Yeah, you know what? I can actually admit that. I am lame. I work for you, too.
When's the last time you've been to a club?
A couple nights ago.
Really?
A couple months ago. But yeah.
Really? Be more specific.
Do you know there's
which
a pandemic?
One, which one is it? Which one is it, though?
That night was a blur, I'll be honest with you.
Well, oh, okay. And are you a club guy? I know you
have. No, I actually hate clubs.
I know you have a significant other, so you're probably not out gallivanting.
No.
Cruising for tail.
I'd much rather sit at a pub and have a beer.
Okay. Yeah, because I think you're right. When you mocked me openly, like, you're out of the game. That cut deep, but it was also a bit of a reality check.
I cannot go anywhere where I have to yell to talk.
I just can't. Yeah.
I just can't. I would prefer to just sit and watch. Mm-hmm. And then you know what? That's why the creepy old guy looks like the creepy old guy at the club.
Because he's uncomfortable?
No, because he doesn't want to talk, so he just stands there. He's just like, I'm just going to have a look. I'm just going to watch. I'm just going to observe. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to sip my drink. And I'm going to watch the young people have fun.
And then if he does try and make a move, that old guy has to say things like, do you want to go somewhere quieter where we can hear each other? And everyone's like, ooh.
Oh, where I can hear you.
Yeah, that's right.
No, he says things like, boy, it's getting late.
Have you ever seen
it? It's 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's 9 o'clock.
Sir, it's still light outside. Why are you in the club in the first place? Okay, we got to go. We're up against it for time. We will be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Brough. He's been Nephew Dom. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.